thinking, I would love to have a chance to talk about your old films with you and all of that, go down memory lane. But then it occurred to me it's not memory lane, because so many of these films are getting a renewed life through cassettes, through the television, through repertory houses and all of that. And you have a whole lifetime preserved on film, which may be the closest we ever get to eternal life or immortality, because film does preserve
it does
life. And here you're in a film about that very topic. So before we get to the film, would you talk a little bit about how you feel about having your life preserved on film like that? Do you see it as a kind of time machine for you, or a sort of preservation of your life on cellular?
I'm going to have to ad lib, because I've never thought of that. I've never been asked that question before, nor has it entered my mind that there is a documentation of my efforts from many, many years
very
ago, when
man.
I was a very
clear
young
up
man.
To the present.
Yes, clear up to the present. I don't know. I think I told you earlier that I have never been high on the work that I've done. I've always thought that I should have been able to do better. Not because of lack of effort or lack of preparation or anything like that. I've always done, but I guess my almost adoration, and that's the wrong word, but such tremendous regard and respect for Spencer Tracy probably got in my way a little bit. I knew everything Spence did, but I couldn't make myself do it, nor could anyone else for that matter. But to know that it could be done and not be able to make it happen has been a frustrating thing for me. As a result, I never in my life saw a picture for the first time of myself that I liked, that I was not really, I'm uncomfortable. Happened to me again yesterday with this thing, same thing, exact same thing. Later on, and the only picture that I can ever remember having seen a second time years and years later was Alexander Graham Bell, and I was with someone that had never seen it, and it was on TV that night, and I looked at it, and I thought it was a good picture. Mainly from the standpoint of the performances by the people in it. Hank Fonda, Loretta Young, Charles Coburn, Gene Lockhart, Spring Byington. Magnificent cast of people in the picture. And an interesting story made with care beyond the average motion picture, because one of Bell's daughters was there for every single second of the shooting.
Really?
Yes. So there was nothing in that picture that was not authentic.
Now, how old were you when you... That's what, 38, 39?
1939. Mm-hmm. January of 1939. I was still 28 years old.
Now, that's not...
Wait a minute. Yeah. I was still... Yeah. No, I was 30 years old. 30 years old would have been 31 in May of 1939.
But you see the unique position this gives you is that... Most of us have only photographs of ourselves at
That's
earlier
right.
ages. You have
understand.
A moving, speaking, at times in color, document of that you.
I understand what you're saying. Now, can I that be of any value to me? I can't see how.
Or does it haunt you ever?
No. Oh, no. My past never haunts me. I've made my mistakes, but I've made my acts of contrition, you know, and all that kind of thing, and I don't know.
Only in the sense that most of us forget so much about what we were in years gone by.
And mine
with
is
the motion
mine,
picture, you can't
it's
really
here.
Forget.
No,
can
you can't. You can't. You can't.
I just find that a fascinating fate.
Well, I can understand
will,
that. I can understand
stuff.
What you're saying, and I can understand that it's appealing to you. But and here again, remember, this is the first time I've been asked anything like this. My first reaction is no, that it doesn't really mean a great deal to me that this is documented. If it pleases me, for instance, Heaven Can Wait is shown, has been shown every year for, I don't know what, 25 or 30 years in Germany at one specific time for, I think, a week. They show it every night or whatever it is, because it's Lubitsch mainly. And a story that they understood, you know, it was real satire, and they can understand that kind of thing. Americans don't appreciate it as well as the Europeans do. That's a joy that I left something like that behind me, but I would have to think that Trading Places gave me a great deal of joy. I must say that. I think I could have done better work in some places, but on the whole, I thought it was a pretty good job. But all that I give credit to John Landis for, because John was a magnificent director to me and was very, very helpful to me, extremely helpful to me. I had total confidence in him, and he had total confidence in me. If you won't use, is this for radio? No, that's all right. It's not that important. But I did have a total confidence in and he and me. So that was great joy for me to make that picture.
In view of the directors that you've worked with, those are sterling words indeed. I came prepared to ask you about two directors, mainly because they're two of my favorites that you've worked with, Henry King and Mitchell Lison.
Well, Henry King was a strange personality. I always felt that it was a freak that he won the Academy Award with the picture that he won the Academy Award with, and that was Song of Bernadette. He was not a religious man, to my way of thinking. What little I knew him, I don't believe I knew him that well, but what little I knew him, there was nothing delicate about him, and this is an extremely delicate subject that you were dealing with. I don't know where it all came, you know, but these things happen. I don't know. I've seen them happen too many times in my life to think they're accidents. They're not. There was a reason that he had something to do with it. There's no doubt. But it's hard for me to understand what, because he was not that kind of a man. He was a.
And that's so typical of so many Hollywood directors. When you try and pin him down,
very
you're
much,
elusive.
Very much so. Very much so. Well, Leo McCarey is one of the most fake characters I've ever known in my life. And yet, look at the contributions he made. Look at the things that he did. Love Story, for God's sake, that original thing that I thought was such a magnificent thing, Going My Way. Bells of St. Mary's, you know.
Yeah, Love Affair with
Love Affair.
Dunn. Yes,
Irene Dunne.
Marvelous.
Oh,
picture.
My God, almighty. Charles Boyer, wasn't it? Yes, Charles Boyer.
And working with Mitchell Lison, too, here was a man who must have brought a very special sensibility to films. Midnight, of course, is one of the great classics, but he's done so many other pictures that I love as well.
He did, but he's another one's hard for me to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult. And there's probably a reason for that, and that is that Loretta Young and Colbert were the two that knew the most about the technical side of this business of anybody that I ever came across. I'm sure that all you had to do, you didn't need a cameraman for them. They could light. They'd look up at where the lights were coming from. They knew whether it's right or wrong. And if it was wrong, look out. You know, that kind of thing. So I have a little difficulty in knowing what a contribution Mitch made. I liked him, by the way. I liked him a great deal.
Great eye.
He did. There's no doubt that he did. But then again, remember what a magnificent cast that was. Rex O'Malley, Mary Astor, John Barrymore, Monty Woolley, Claudette, as good a comedian probably as you've ever known in the business. And other people too. Francis Lederer was another one in the picture. You know, magnificently cast picture. Where would you find a picture cast like that today? You know, you wouldn't have that. So I really can't tell you what a contribution he made. He must have made a contribution. There isn't any doubt about that in my mind, and a good one. But I don't know exactly what it was.
Meantime, you're dealing with the studio, 20th Century Fox, that in the 40s produced some of the greatest musicals of all time, and yet which seems in modern hindsight sometimes to be overlooked in the musical film surveys. Have you noticed?
Oh, yes.
MGM always gets the center stage.
I'm well aware.
Yet you were there with so many of the Fox productions, the musicals.
I think if you would go look at the box office records, money-wise, you'll find that Zanuck outdrew anything. Over a period of time, Zanuck musical outdrew what Metro musicals made.
Bold, slashing color.
Yep.
People like the Nicholas Brothers. Now,
That's right. You
were on the set with them at
least. Yes, I was.
I interviewed them recently, and they're still as dynamic as ever.
That doesn't surprise me.
Was there something in the air in the Fox studios that has kept you guys so young?
Zanuck ran that thing just like that. Only Zanuck ran it. Everybody on the lot had one idea in mind, that was to please him. And for me, he was a genius in my book. Well, yeah. Genius, but also he was so, so good to me. My God, he was.
So you're able to attribute a lot of your success directly to him.
I am. Indeed, I am.
When did you first come to his attention? Can we track that down?
Sure, you can. I made a test in 1935 for Metro. And, of course, I thought it was a bad test, but later on, you know, with hindsight, I didn't like anything that I did. So whether or not the test was as bad as I thought, I don't know. Anyway, I made a test. Metro turned it down. An agent by the name of George Frank saw it. That year, in 1935, Will Rogers was killed. He was the biggest draw in the business.
It was Wiley Post.
That's right, up in Alaska. Shirley Temple was just about through. Janet Gaynor was through. Warner Baxter was through. Connie Bennett was through. Loretta they still had, and that's about it.
And Janet Gaynor's co-star,
Warner Back.
She made so many films with Charles Farrell.
Oh, well, he wasn't at Fox. He was gone by that time. He wasn't at Fox, and he was desperate, you know, because he'd only been at 20th Century for a very short time, and all of a sudden, what has he got? What is he going to make pictures with? Well, George Frank saw the test over at Metro, and he thought he saw something in it. So he went to Zanuck, and he arranged a test for me to make in New York in December of 1935, here in New York, 10th Avenue, that studio over in 10th Avenue. Joe Pincus was the name of the man that was head of the studio. And I made a test reading with a girl on one of those stages over there. You know, they didn't have the space that they have today. They shot the test. Joe Helper was the guy that directed it. He worked for Pincus. Not a director at all, but he directed this little thing. And, you know, the regular thing, a few lines, this girl, and straight on, you know, and sideways and all this and that kind of thing. And we're through. And Joe said, "Do you sing?" And I said, "Well, I sing on radio, Joe. You probably have heard me." He says, "Yeah, I know that." He said, "I said, but I can't read music. And you'd have to get me a copy of the song because I don't know anything." So he went down. He came back with Blue Moon, I think. Song Blue Moon, Blue Moon.
He
came back with that, and Joe played the piano. So I stand by the piano, and they put the camera in on me like this, and I sing Blue Moon. Well, this is perfect for Zanuck, because Zanuck had a lot of musicals on the thing, and he had Alice Faye. And this is exactly what happened. In January, they took up an option on me to start March 1st for one picture. After that, at the end of that one picture, it was a 5-year contract with 1-year options, each 40 weeks guaranteed, starting at a decent salary, a very decent salary, with an option for me, with my privilege to do 2 radio shows a week if I wished, which is a plus.
Now, you wished at that point to continue radio.
I was doing radio. I was doing First Nighter, which was in the top 10 from the day that it went on the air until when I left it, it was still in the top 10. So they brought that show out with me, and I came to Hollywood in March 1st of 1936. I flew out here, arrived early in the morning, and I went to work that day. And the picture was finished before the end of the month, and it was right around the end of the month that they had the preview. And they had a month in which to take up my option. But my family was all back in Chicago. You know, my second son was already born, and I went in, I had my agent go in and ask if they couldn't decide as soon as they could whether or not they were going to take up the rest of my option, because I was lonely, you know, and I didn't want to stay out here if they weren't going to do it. And they took it up. And this is the start of it.
The versatility then obviously appealed to Mr. Zanuck.
Well, also in that thing, while it was being done, there was a brother in the part, in the show, that didn't have a lot to do, so they asked me if I could do an Italian accent. I said yes, which I could do, and I played a dual role in the picture. So this, you know, just kind of sort of like this.
What a wonderful time working with the Fox Blondes, being on the set, dealing with Technicolor. In fact, many of us forget or have never experienced, have no way of knowing what it was like working on those early Technicolor productions. Lights must have been
horrible. Horrible, horrible, horrible.
Special makeup to withstand that?
Yes, special makeup. No, not to withstand it, just took special makeup.
And constant applications, I suppose.
Oh. And for a medium shot, waist shot, out of doors, in a circle, from here, right straight around like this, you could easily have 50 pieces. Silvers, leads, tins, barn doors, every kind, pumping this light into you. Every one of them focused on you, on these two people there. That much, you can imagine how much, these are reflectors, every one of them reflectors. Think how much light was coming in at you. They'd have to lead you in with your eyes closed, especially Loretta. She had blue eyes, and they couldn't stand much pressure at all. Mm. We were lucky if we could go 35 or 40 seconds, and they'd have to break.
And even in exterior shooting, limited as it might be, did you still have to have that supplemental light?
Oh, yes, sure, you had to have it. Because what are you going to do? The sunlight is up here, you know, somewhere over here. So you had to fill in all this. It had to be filled in.
What special kind of makeup applications did you have to have? For example, did certain colors register the way they wanted them to on the color film?
No, no, they didn't. There
so
were
they
certain,
had to adjust accordingly?
They did. There were certain colors that you couldn't use, and what they are, I can't remember. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the restrictions, but there were some mm-hmm. where you couldn't have them on the set at all.
Take us through memories you have of some of the Fox Blondes, if you would. Of course, the famous Fox Blondes. We hear so much about that succession of wonderful ladies of the screen. Alice Faye, for example, what a subtle, understated kind of style she had. Was she like that off camera as well?
Oh, one of the totally insecure. She came from Hell's Kitchen here in New York. You know, father, I think, was either a fireman or a policeman. And I rather think he was a drinker, you know. And this is where she was raised. This is her background here. Became a singer, you know, and, you know, she started with the Rudy Valley. That's where she first came to attention. And Fox got her out there, you know, but I don't think you've ever known a more insecure person in her work than Alice Faye. Beautiful human being, by the way, a lovely human being, giving, really giving. Nervous, you couldn't believe the nervousness of her hands wringing wet, sopping wet, every single shot that she ever made, ever. Just an agony for her.
What among all of those films do you look back upon with the greatest pleasure, or maybe a moment in one of those films?
Heaven Can Wait is the only one that I ever think of, really, truthfully, when I think of my old films.
Lubitsch.
And that's the correct word. It isn't Heaven Can Wait, it's Lubitsch.
Yeah. That famous touch that you hear so much about, as you indicated this morning, only the result of months of polishing.
8 months.
Did that ever include the cast as well, or by the time you got the script, had all that work already been done?
Oh, it all totally been done. Yeah. Oh, in his mind, and talked out with Sam and diagrammed, you know, all that kind of thing, but not to the performers. But then when you rehearsed a scene, then is when it took place. Then is when it was made to happen. Mm-hmm. And he was severe in wanting exactly what he wanted.
I've seen some of his pictures in the 20s after Mary Pickford brought him over in 1923. He seems to have fit so readily and quickly into a style of comedy that was never to leave him thereafter. Do you like that kind of film? Do you think it was of a particular time and place? Or is there room yet today for that brittle, high-style, sophisticated comedy?
Yes, certainly there is, in my opinion. Certainly. I would love to do one of those. My. Be thrilled to death to do one. You can't use the same stories, of course. You know, you'd have to make them stories that belong to the present day. But
we have an example on stage with Rex Harrison and Claudette Colbert.
Claudette Colbert doing a very light thing, I'm told. You know, why not?
Frederick Lonsdale.
Why not? Yeah, of course. Frederick Lonsdale. But look at the cast he's got, though. George Rowe is one of the most consistent performers I've ever known in my life, I think. He was in their other show, you know, too. Toured with him for over a year.
So far we've talked about, of course, the work that we associate so much with Don Ameche, the singing, okay, the Italian impressions, the radio, the films. Yeah. But you said some things this morning that astounded me, all the experiences you've had, oil well drilling, among others. Could you repeat once again this astounding recitation of some of the things you have done?
Sure. I put together a syndicate that I had a very small piece of. I had 15% of the action. And we bought... It was $1 million that we put in a kitty, and I made my 15% contribution. Dan Rice was the name of the man in Chicago. He was the one that he was extreme, left $70 million when he died. So Dan and all the rest of the partners were from Dan's end. I was a friend of Dan's. But I was chosen to go down and spend the summer in Midland, Texas.
And what year was this?
1949, if I remember correctly. We checkerboarded. You know what checkerboarded means? One section is yours, this section is ours, this checkerboard, was Standland of Indiana, which is it was one of the producing companies of Standland, you know, Standard Oil. 25,000 acres, so that meant we had close to 20, close to 13,000 acres. They had close to 13,000 acres. And I went down there, $1 million in the till with my checkbook. And I sought legal advice immediately that I went down there. And I went over to Fort Worth, met a man by the name of Harry Weeks. And Harry explained to me, I kept asking, what could I do to make this effective, you know, and who do I hire to be the drillers or this, or that, and the other thing? Are there any this, and that, and the other? So many questions. I spent...
You were learning as you go.
Oh, hell yes, certainly. It was all ad lib. None of us knew one damn thing about the oil business. But Scurry County had been in short while before. That's what they call reef production, only about 6,000 feet down. But it just revolutionized the oil industry, you know, because, God, that was one of the biggest hits. One of the biggest hits in America. We had adjoining county, Borden County, is where we had our property. So in talking to Harry and then back and forth talking to people in Midland, Harry's idea, that if I could sell off part of the property, there was no year or 6 months limit on capital gains at that particular time. If I could sell off part of the property with the proviso that I would drill three wells to this number of feet or rock where I couldn't drill anymore, one or the other. And I thought that was very sound. So, and another thing that I think it was his suggestion, it might have been a man by the name of Bill Lane from Midland, I'm not positive. Anyway, that suggestion was that I put together what they call a turnkey job. And a turnkey job meant that this, for X number of dollars, he had to drill to this depth or rock that we couldn't get through. In other words, it was a set fee. So I went to this guy, Warren was his last name. I can't remember his first name. Had a tremendous reputation. I made the deal with him. Man by the name of Griffith was with Plymouth Oil. He was located in Houston. Plymouth Oil, he came up with a Plymouth Oil plane, and I don't think I had 10 minutes discussion with him about what this deal was all about and what I wanted for the property. I know what I wanted for the property. I wanted $50 an acre, which was going to give us $40 an acre capital gain.
But all this time, were these people wondering, what is an actor doing
down here?
Yes,
of course they did. Sure they did. Certainly they had to. Well, you know. So all this man wanted to do was play poker and drink. So for two solid days, I played poker and drank. I used my own money playing poker, by the way. I wouldn't delve into the... And I'm talking about open game. Open game poker. And we finished at right around 8 o'clock of the second night. And we walked up to breakfast, and when we sat down to breakfast, has something to eat, he says, you got a deal. And he signed a piece of paper, and he went out. So now I had a capital gain of $40 an acre on 4,000 acres. So what the wind-up of the whole thing, the first two wells were dry. One did go to 12.5, by the way. The third well, by the time I came to that one, I got... dry hole money from Phillips and from one other company. I can't remember what the other company was. So that cost me very little, only one third of the cost. And that was a dry hole. And we wound up, I spent all summer, June, July, August, and part of September, and we drilled all these three holes in that length of time, and we all came out making a small amount of money because of the capital gain. And the loss.
Was this an ambition to open up a new career? Or
no,
was this simply
wanted? No, I never always wanted to do it. I tried anything, you know, anything at all that I thought could make it happen. You know,
Cocoon, you have a great line where you say, men are always explorers.
Yes, well, I was an explorer, I'll tell you that.
From you somehow, it fits.
Yeah, with Dan Rice, I played the commodity market. I told you that, you know, and that's one of the most treacherous markets in all the world. I went into cattle feeding for a while. And if I had stayed, well, the man that stayed with me, who invested, I think, just probably a little less than I did, wound up making a couple million dollars, and I lost $25,000. For the simple reason, I reasoned that I was borrowing money from a bank, and they owned the feedlot. And I got it into my head that, damn it, they got me going both ways. I'm paying for the feed, you know, they're earning money on the feed, and also they're earning interest on the money that I'm borrowing from them. And I got out. All I had to do was stay in for like 3 months longer. This is all on my own. And I would have made more than Gordon Reiner made out of it. He made well over $2 million.
I'm beginning to wonder if there's anything you have not done.
Another deal? Amana? Does that mean anything to you?
Of course.
All right, Amana. Amana was... I had a friend, George Forstner, still alive. Amana is a community in Iowa, right outside of Cedar Rapids. They're not a religious group, but they were banded together as a community that abided by the old country laws. They were all Germans. So George Forstner came to me and made an offer for me to go to Dan Rice and buy 50% of Amana with him. He would run it. He had control of the wages because the Amananites went according to what he wanted. And Dan sent a man out to investigate it. And I'll never forget this. And the man came back and gave a bad report on it. And it was totally dishonest. Totally dishonest, but I didn't know it. I had 10% finder's fee of that. He went to the bank in Cedar Rapids and borrowed the money at 4%, I think it was, and sold it to... the name won't come to me right now. I don't know what he got. $500-700 million for the plant.
The stuff of these narratives seems to be the very stuff of popular entertainment today. Right?
Well,
Dynasty, Falcon Crest,
I guess. Yeah. Well, I did all
these
things.
There is a romance in all of that. Was it a romantic time for you in all of these things?
Oh, my God almighty. Can you imagine what it was like living in Midland, Texas for a whole summer? Dry, you know, totally dry. And they said you can stand here and see further and see less than any place in the world.
I was in the Army near Killeen, Texas.
Well, all right, then you know what it was like. And yet I met some wonderful people down there.
Now, they all must have known you from the movies.
Oh, they did. Of course they knew me.
So they knew you as a figure about 20 feet high on a silver screen.
They did. But after a few days, they didn't treat me like that at all. Just treated me as one of their people.
I'd like to conclude with one mention of that wonderful voice that we've been hearing. It has not changed. It's a voice, like all memorable voices, that it is a timeless.
Yes, thank God it has been. It has been, and I don't work at it as hard as I do. I vocalize some, but that's the extent of it.
Well, we hear you sing in Cocoon. I'm trying to remember now what the song is.
Well, I sang twice. I sang I'm in the Mood for Love once and Some Enchanted Evening when I made the proposal to Gwen Verdon in the hall.
So many of us haven't heard you sing in so long.
No.
Whose idea was that? Did that come up in the script?
It was in the script. It was in the script when I first read it.
You must have been delighted, huh?
Yeah. Well, such a funny thing, I think, standing there with a bouquet of flowers at his age. Some enchanted. This strikes me so funny.
Don Ameche, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And the movies are a time machine, and we are glad of it.
Yeah, that's a fascinating observation of yours. I'll think about that, I promise you.
And I want everybody to watch for Cocoon as well. A whole new career. Really?
Maybe. Who knows? If it is, fine. If it isn't, fine, too.